I'm drinking this milk tea.
Is it like a flat white, but with tea?
It's like somebody made tea and then put milk in it and then
canned it for distribution.
Yeah, and put it in a can. And I was like, okay, well.
Oh, I was more so asking, like, what's the ratio on that? Is it milk is top billed, so I feel like milk must be pretty prominent.
Well, let's see. Black tea, first ingredient.
Okay.
Then milk.
They duped us.
Top two. I mean,
I'm going with it's probably like a 75-25.
Which?
75% tea, 25% milk.
Okay, that's a fair ratio.
Like if you lap it up a little bit and you get a little taste for it, you go, okay, yeah, that's probably about 25% milk in there, which is a lot of milk.
What an accurate tongue.
It's way too much.
It's way too much. Yeah, well, it's milk tea, you know what I'm saying?
It's right there on the marquee.
I live at the Kyle Graham estate. He's been there for almost 10 years, I think.
Oh, Max Stern went by for a party the other day. Were you there?
He came to the beach with us last week.
Oh, shit, that's what it was. Yeah, he shared something that I probably shouldn't share on the podcast, but while I was on the phone with him one day while you guys were out down the shore, I heard him yell hello and wave, and then he was just like, oh, I just did something very embarrassing. I was like, oh, what happened? And he said, I saw Kyle Graham riding towards me on a bicycle, and I was very excited to see him outside of the house. And then this person on the bike got 10 feet closer to me, and I realized it was a middle-aged woman with blonde hair.
Just not him at all.
Just not even, just had blonde hair. That was the only similar factor.
That Whoops. Happens. I feel like people do that to me all the time, thinking I'm somebody that I'm not.
Oh, just like they wave to you, yeah, that, thinking you're
just having
else.
Like long hair and a mustache. You're just automatically grouped in. People think you're just all these different guys.
Well, that's a testament to how personable you are. You know, people see you and they want to wave. They're like, that guy has friend energy.
You're the only
person I know that looks like you.
Really?
I don't know. There's lots of tall guys with long hair and mustaches.
I don't know a single one.
They're not tall.
They are. You got to come.
They might be shorter and look like you.
Out in Fishtown, there's tons of them. Everybody looks like me there. Come on up.
You might have like a multiplicity scenario on your hands.
I'm just constantly just walking around like saying, yo, Nick, hey.
it's not me.
It's not you.
It's definitely not me. West Philly?
No, all over Philly.
Oh, yeah, they have a Nick embargo in West Philly. He's not allowed in anymore.
I don't go over that river.
Can't share his wares.
Got to cross the whole river. It's a pain in the ass. I'm going to get a boat.
Anyway, there's probably a good cold open somewhere in all of that. Mikey, do you want to do a drum roll for us?
Cotton, 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 cotton.
You're listening to the Super Weeks, Super Weekly Supercast. I'm your host, Evan.
And I am your host, Doc Crispag Levo Bag.
And I am your host, Michael Paul Jonathan Davis Tashian.
And special... wow, this is tough.
maybe you should sit up.
No. From the other side of the river of where Mikey is, will not cross the river. No, I'm not going to go with this one. Today's special guest, just introduce yourself. I'm fucking blowing it.
Hi, I'm Nick.
And you may know Nick, full name Nick Finelli, from bands such as Omar and Scarier Area.
Probably not, though.
I mean, nobody knows any of us from anything, so you don't have to even add that.
I mean,
to
if you were living in Philadelphia in the late aughts and the early teens, you'll know.
I took your money at the door somewhere.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. You might know Nick from the Cracker Factory, a beloved DIY venue in Fishtown.
Sheesh, haven't thought about that one in a while.
Or B&D2, where Nick and I lived together a long time ago, back when we were, I think, our junior year of college.
Yep, junior. You know, you left senior year and went with Evan.
We moved to Sprinkle Kingdom. Yeah.
Sprinkle Kingdom. Mm-hmm.
I feel like the kingdom, though, is the sister house, if you will.
Yeah, well, we took people from B&D2 and from our neighbor house, Hoopty Hoop, I think
Hoopty
it was
Hoop,
called.
Sure.
Yeah, that's where our much lauded friend John Bacon came from. He lived at Hoopty Hoop. And of our camp from B&D, I think Brian, Trey, and Rachel moved. And of course, Brian Glassett, who we've mentioned before, is the guy who gave me my nickname, I think, right?
Yeah. I can't really remember the origins too well.
Oh,
but
okay. It was you guys, for
it
sure.
It was definitely
that crew
us.
Of people that dubbed me the Doctor.
The Doctor. I'll take some responsibility for that, I think.
I'll give you some of that responsibility. I'll tell you what.
Evan had secretly claimed some of it for himself at some point. He's returning it to you.
You're trying to, stealing my valor?
No. Oh, goodness gracious. I think it's actually very offensive for you to even use that as a joke.
Yeah, Evan
just kidding. Who cares?
A storied military record, so he's offended by your stolen valor crack.
One of us here does.
And he's the one who laughed the loudest at it.
That's because he has a good sense of humor.
Yeah, that's true. And Evan has some sense of humor, I'm sure. Give yourself some
credit. I have a couple of squirrels in my brain that are just chewing on some nuts.
They're drowning in milk tea.
And just drowning in milk. No, just milk. Let me tell you, though, I remember spending some time at B&D, you know, doing some power hours with you, Nick.
Oh, boy. Actually, someone, I think it was probably Candace, brought it up recently. She was asking me about the Flubber posters that John Bacon had. And
oh, does she want some?
Oh, you have them now? Is that
the... I'm sure there's more. They were abundant. So there's more somewhere. Yeah, I'm packing Flub,
I remember
my guy.
There were lots of them. And I do remember I earned one of them in relation to a power hour by throwing up good and throwing up in an impressive way.
This actually still impresses me to this day when I revisit the memory.
I love that.
Well, I guess Evan, he typically would challenge you to a power hour, right? To see who could outlast.
He would instigate.
I wouldn't say it was a challenge. I think it was a thing that we would do, usually us and Pato.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, our beloved friend Pato. But Evan, you would rarely make it through the first, I want to even say, 10 shots.
Well, it was shots of beer, and I would make it probably through the first half hour, maybe.
That's when it starts to get really hairy, if I remember correctly. It's after about 30 of them.
But Nick, much to the detriment of his own body, and true to the name, would power through and drink as much as he possibly could, but you have the unique capacity for, I guess, projectile vomiting is what it's called.
Yeah, I cleared a distance. I was trying to throw up in a direction, but not onto stuff. And I was able to puke beyond the stuff into the grass. So
yes, we had a large porch in the front of the house that had like a stair set that went up to it. And then a small yard that separated us from the sidewalk. And Nick, immediately after a shot, you just stood up and very politely walked out of the room, opened the front door, and you put your hands on your hips at the edge of the porch.
like a boat captain.
Yeah, just dropped your jaw, and without even moving your body, projectile vomited over the yard. Yeah,
I think I was trying to avoid the trash cans, and this heroic feat is what earned me my very own copy of the Flubber posters. It was given to me almost immediately for my successes.
Dear listener, if you're not familiar, I guess you could probably just Google Robin Williams Flubber and you'll get the exact image. But our former roommate and friend, John Bacon, somehow got his hands on, I think it was 40-some Flubber posters, theatrical release Flubber posters.
It was a dumb amount.
Yeah. And we used to wallpaper one room in each house that we lived in entirely with Flubber posters. And that room would then be known as the Flubber room. And that's where most of our smoke-related shenanigans would go down.
Wild times.
A good time. Yeah. I distinctly remember doing those power hours, just like somebody would put an iPod on shuffle to play 1 minute of each song.
I had a program that would cut them for me.
That's great.
On my MacBook that I got for college, I downloaded some weird third-party software that would take songs out of your iTunes library and cut a minute out of it and then make a playlist and like add a whistle at the minute mark. It was a pretty sophisticated thing we had going on.
Designated specifically for power hours, yeah. I guess.
It was great.
So I guess we must have been doing them enough that I considered even if there was an app, let alone getting the app and utilizing it, you know?
I mean, we were 21, you know? Yeah. 22.
Fair enough. 20, except 21. Pato was 19.
Yeah, that's true. Pato, the youngster. He lives right around the corner from us, I think. Yeah,
I see him in our neighborhood sometimes, and I'll yell at him. He doesn't respond. Must be accustomed to people constantly, his fan club always yelling his name at him.
I think he's just listening to punk in his earbuds.
Also a possibility.
I don't know. Probably podcasts about sports.
Oh, yeah. He loves those New York Football Giants.
Season's coming right up.
It's coming right up. Let me tell you, I have a tie-dye New York Giants shirt that I've been too embarrassed to wear for the past few seasons.
That's reasonable. Maybe you could meet up with Pat and watch a game and you could wear it and then you'll have a good application for it.
Well, we usually watch them right there in our living room.
You could build a garage and maybe watch them in the garage together so you don't have to watch them in front of people.
I don't know.
It's a lot of prep work. He's drinking just milk. Close the door. Mikey, is that just a Tupperware full of milk that you're drinking?
It's actually horchata.
Oh, that's good milk.
The sweetened rice milk, if I recall.
That's the good shit, dude.
Fancy milk.
I was like seltzer, horchata, both.
Mix them up.
I didn't mix them.
Oh, obviously, it's like carbonated horchata. Yeah, that's a tall order.
We'll do a bev check. What do you got going on over there, Nick?
I got a hibiscus flavored La Croix.
Ooh, sounds nice. Like a nice time.
And I'm going grapefruit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Soleil. Soleil.
I believe that's just simply Soleil. Cirque du Soleil is a reference point, but Soleil is also an acceptable pronunciation.
Soleil.
Doc is just beverageless.
Yeah, I blew it. I was so busy setting things up. I forgot to snag a bit of liquid for myself. Oh, Nick is coming through for
Packing.
Me. Oh, the Guava Sao Paulo. I just recently got a case of these. Yeah.
Dude, I love that. I've never seen anyone carry around seltzers like beers.
This is just
like when you hang with a friend and it's like, oh, I got you. This is like my first time actually seeing this.
It's preparation. It's all.
Nick is a classy, classy guy.
Preparation S, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's seltzer for the S. I got it.
Yeah, yeah. It feels good on the whole.
Wow.
I'm holding.
That was good.
I'm usually holding.
That's good. Are you a seltzer guy? Are you deep in it?
Deep in it. Yeah, me and my roommate Kyle typically got 7 to 10 flavors on deck.
Ooh. Oh, we do something very similar here. Do you have this designated seltzer fridge?
We do have a second fridge, mostly seltzer, some beer, and other various drinks. It's the drinks fridge.
Oh, man. Oh, I'll have to reciprocate downstairs when I show you our third fridge we have in the house. That's just for seltzer. The second fridge is just for hot sauce. And of course, the first fridge is for
that's
all.
That's a unique situation you guys find yourselves in with that hot sauce fridge, I think.
Yeah, well, we have Philadelphia's number one saucier, Evan Bernard, in this house.
That's so me, the number one saucier. I have zero of my hot sauces in there, though, because I always eat them.
So it's just empty and running?
No, it's just filled with the dregs of other bottles of hot sauces that are lesser.
Mm.
That are from all over, everywhere we've toured, and I imagine other ones that you've ordered from other places. Plenty of Cajuns in there from Ohio.
There is actually some. I do love Cajuns. That's the stuff.
Great hot sauce company.
You're a collector.
But since I didn't go on tour last year at all, it's been a minute. It's been probably almost 2 years since I've been on tour, or a year and a half. I don't know how time works these days. But let me tell you, I'm running low on reserves here. I don't have much.
Seltzer?
We have anywhere from 3 to 30 cases in the house at all times. But hot sauce, you know, I'm just running low.
That fridge is full. What are you talking about?
A lot of that shit sucks, though, and I don't want it.
Okay.
It doesn't belong to me. The good stuff, though, I'm running
Anyone
low.
Anyone can have it.
Yeah, seriously. Go give Nick a bunch of that hot sauce.
Nothing.
I'll just leave him out front. After we're done recording, I'll put a sign, hot sauce for free, never worn.
Not very good.
Well, here's the thing is like, I feel like people know me as the hot sauce guy. So a bunch of people just like leave hot sauce in that fridge. Also, Bill left a bunch of hot sauce in that fridge when he moved out.
Oh, that's fair.
But, you know, oh, maybe it doesn't suck. See, here's the thing. I don't know. There's a bunch there that don't have labels. And I'm like, I don't know if I made this or somebody else made this or how old it is or what's going on in here. I guess I should try them. We'll have to do a wing night. Somebody call Nick Holdorf. Get the wings on deck.
Is he a wingman?
Oh, my goodness. Nick prides himself.
He's a winghead?
Yeah, he prides himself on his wings. He does make quite a good wing. It takes a very long time, but it's always crispy and it's always very tender on the inside. And that is the mark of a good wing. He often doesn't make enough sauce, but lately, since I've been coming around to the football season, he makes enough sauce now. He also puts like fucking 20 pounds of raw garlic in it. And I fuck with that hard.
20 pounds?
It's not 20 pounds. We're talking maybe 2 cloves. But. Okay, a
couple cloves.
Big cloves, about 10 pounds a piece.
Yeah, huge elephant cloves. That's what I call them.
There is a type of garlic called elephant garlic, Evan.
Yeah, I know.
Is it just big?
It's just big. A little bit more purple.
Purple is my favorite color.
And elephant's your favorite animal.
Actually, that's true. Holy shit.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy all the things we're putting together here on this podcast.
We're really unpacking a lot.
Oh, and Mikey has got
brandishing
a
his
Pop-Tart.
Contributing
to
purple
camera.
To you.
Looked red. I'm hungry. Wish I had chips.
So I did my due diligence and listened to the most recent episode with my friend Tim Jordan, and Pop-Tarts came up in that. Are you just a all-day Pop-Tart eater? Is that your jam? You mentioned that you were eating them on tour or something, like you would eat a bunch of Pop-Tarts.
Yeah, I don't usually.
But when you do.
That's not true.
I was just dog-sitting. Well, I guess it is a common thread in my diet, really.
Tartan.
At least, like, I got to say, I definitely took a break for a while.
It's healthy.
He went to Toaster Strudels.
Well, these are from Trader Joe's.
Whoa.
Oh.
I had some fancy ones this past weekend, maybe? Maybe the weekend before, and it was really good, and I was like, wow. And I thought this might be it. This is not it.
What's better about a fancy Pop-Tart?
I don't know. It was just different and weird, and I liked it.
Sometimes it's all it
takes. Tired of like all like the, you know, just way too much sugar.
Looking
well,
for
I mean, it. I mean, this is way too much sugar. It's very sweet.
Well, you're the king of sweets, and you're the tour snack champion. I guess to actually tie Nick into this conversation, when you were touring, what was your common go-to snack at like gas stations and stuff?
Just coffee.
That's not a snack.
Lots of coffee.
Yeah, it is.
The most of the touring I did was with Candace, a.k.a. Hemming. Check it out.
Are you?
And the other half of Omar, the band that we noted at the top. The other half of Omar,
or my old band.
Love you, Candace.
Candace doesn't drive, so it'd just be the two of us. So I would just have to drive the whole thing. So it's definitely mostly coffee. We would, you know, like get up at the hotel and try to find like a Starbucks or equivalent so I could get like a trash can full of coffee with as many espresso dropped in it as I could get and just drive for 10 hours. Pretty, yeah.
Can you see Evan's like smile growing as you're describing
this? Is that your style as well?
Oh, no. I'm just thinking about Mikey and how Mikey was the driver and Mikey would have a fucking like 72-ounce cup filled with coffee that would be refilled and refilled and refilled. These are early ponies days. Lately, it's less.
The driver way, really.
But you gotta do it. I remember distinctly the Mikey Tashin 72 cup. You know those like big, you remember Big Phil's? You ever seen the Big Phil's?
Like Bam Margera's dad?
Yeah, so Mikey had Bam Margera's dad. He just drank
full of coffee.
But yeah, like, you know, a trash can full of coffee and Mikey would just slam them all day. That's why my smile was growing because I was like, damn, yeah, I remember those.
Birds of a feather here.
Yeah, exactly. You guys fill a similar role in our two worlds.
Tim Jordan also.
Big driver guy.
Well, the thing that I will never forget about him is he drinks coffee all day long until it's time to start drinking beer. That is how he does it every single day. I don't know about if, I'm sure maybe things change, I don't know. But for years, I've known him to just coffee all day till beer, no water, period.
Seems like he's ignoring the important seltzer portion of the day.
Yeah, see, that's my thought as well.
There's one more drink he's missing out on.
The three food groups.
I was thinking about, you guys ever had this problem where you have like an hour and a half drive and you drink six seltzers in that time period and you have to pee so bad?
Mm-hmm. And then you're looking for parking or whatever.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
city traffic right when you get there.
Oh, my God.
I largely forget to drink anything or eat anything all day most of the time. Even if we're skating for like 5 or 6 hours, people will urge me to drink water. And I'm just like, oh, I forgot my water bottle, so I'm not going to drink anything. Even if my shorts and my clothing are like soaked all the way through from sweat, I won't think about it until I get home.
I can't. I have to be drinking liquid at all times. It's like my safety blanket. So I'm drinking tons of water all day and then I'm, you know, slamming seltzers left and right. It takes me like, you know, 30 seconds to finish a can of that shit. So it's like if I'm drinking six in an hour and a half drive, it's because I'm pacing myself.
Well, and also hence your iconic tattoo that you have on your forearm, I think, right? Your seven cups. You
know? Yeah, it's five.
Nick, have you seen this? Oh, it's five cups. Excuse me.
But it's, you know.
You know what they say, five in the hand is better than seven on the arm.
Yeah, no, Nick's shaking his head. Yeah, I think we all agree there.
We all know who they are. We follow.
What's the cups about?
When I was younger, I didn't drink enough water.
So your tally.
So I got a tattoo where I could fill in water cups, color in the water each day. So I
remember to do it.
To drink enough water until one of my coworkers, who was a marathon runner, was like, oh, based on your body weight, that's actually not enough water.
No, not even close, I don't think.
Yeah, are we going to get more cups or what?
I think I need about seven. However, at this point, I've become addicted to my water bottle, so I'm drinking fucking like seven, you know, 32-ounce water bottles a day. I think I'm pretty good.
That should do it, yeah.
Time to upgrade your tattoo.
Yeah, maybe also get a little bit of salt in your diet, too. You could be depleting yourself of that, and that causes like a whole different medical scenario. I forget what that's
Chris,
called.
Chris, have you seen how much hot chili oil I eat in a day?
Yeah.
I haven't, but I'd imagine it's an impressive
amount.
Okay,
well, have Chris show you my 28-ounce chili oil jars that I have two of and go through both of them in a month.
I think it's you got it at H-Mart. Is that where you get that, right?
I just got it at the little Dong Fat Plaza down the street.
Oh, yeah, the grocery store right near us. It has like an old grandma on the front who looks very just the most
Lao
neutral
Ma.
Expression you can see of a person on the front. What was it called, Evan?
Called Lao Gan Ma.
Lao Gan Ma. What does that mean again in English?
Something with grandma.
Okay.
Chili oil lots.
It's my chili oil grandma. But I think I get enough salt based on the amount of chili oil that I consume daily.
Yes, point taken. Absolutely.
It's I probably am having too much salt.
Well, fortunately, you have at least 5 or 6 gallons of water going through you to balance it out. So I think you're doing all right.
Also, you know, what about club soda? I love a club soda. Nick, how do you feel about club soda?
Isn't it just the same thing as seltzer?
But it has minerals and salts in it.
I feel like a lot of times you're getting a club soda, and if that's the difference between club soda and seltzer, they're lying about it being club soda.
How do you feel about tonic water, though?
That stuff's gross.
I used to love drinking that when I was a kid.
That's very strange.
Yeah, it's a weird experience, and I definitely would not enjoy it now, but whenever, like, my extended family, there's a lot of big drinkers, and they would make a lot of fancy mixed drinks for themselves at the beach, and I just had a fascination with tonic water when I was little, maybe because it was the first beverage I saw that came in that kind of chody little bottle that I had.
Little glass.
I took a sip of it. I loved the stuff, and they just enjoyed giving it to me, so maybe
that's really funny to give tonic water to a kid. That's a hilarious thing to do.
Yeah, I guess it was part of that, like, positive feedback loop I was getting from them, too, where I was just, like, basically doing a stunt for them.
Yeah, probably. That's a pretty funny idea.
Such a funny guy.
You'll like this kid. Trust me. Doesn't taste weird at all.
I don't think I've had raw, like, just tonic, not in a mixed drink, ever.
It's not really good. There is no reason for me to be drinking it.
I'm assuming it's bitter.
Yes, very much so. And it kind of dries your mouth out.
Yeah, I don't want that. Get it out of here.
Well, to circle back to your original question, Evan, I think club soda is good, but I do think they're lying unless it's, like, you know, Pellegrino or whoever, some fancy thing.
Like mineral water.
If you're going to Acme and buying the Soliel brand club soda, they're lying to you about that being club soda. That's just salty seltzer.
But that is what club soda is. It's salty seltzer.
Is it the right minerals, though? The good minerals? Or are they just putting whatever minerals they got around?
They're probably taking some salt and throwing some salt in it. I don't know if they're taking magnesium and all that stuff you actually want and throwing it in, but
I don't know what minerals are good.
All right. Top five seltzer flavors. Go.
Oh, sheesh. I mean, the top two for me got to be Spindrift, which barely counts. It's technically should be in a category all its own because it actually does have fruit juice in it. But the purple and the pink Spindrift are my favorites.
That's what? Blackberry
and the raspberry lime, I think, or something like that. Those are my faves. I just had
the blood orange. It was really good.
Ooh. They have a strawberry one now.
Ooh.
Which, it's much better than any other because it actually tastes like strawberries. It's got, like, the bitterness to it it's very good. I recommend. Also, I'm a big fan of the hibiscus that I'm modeling right here. I'll save it for plugs at the end. But
oh, it's lovely.
Okay.
It's some of the best LaCroix art that I've seen.
And then the the Wegmans ginger is another favorite of mine.
Oof, God, I love the 365 Whole Foods brand ginger. Wow.
Oh, I haven't had that one. I don't get into the Whole Foods much.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Spindrift Orange Mango.
Okay. Yeah, that one's pretty good.
Fucking fire.
They're the best, but they
really are.
They also have sugar in them and cost a lot of money compared to.
I also think that perhaps they're not technically seltzer.
It's kind of pushing it. Definitely toeing a line.
This is bullshit.
They are delicious.
That's why they're good.
I stand by them as my top two.
All right, Doc, how about you?
Damn.
Top two.
Top two, just pick two? Ooh, that's even harder than doing five. I feel like you can just throw whatever into five. Honestly, I want to say cucumber melon.
I love the cucumber melon, let me
tell you.
That's
a rock solid taste on that one. Very refreshing, nice and light. I don't know what my other one would be. Because I don't love grapefruit, although we commonly get that.
It's a classic.
Well, if you fucked with the Waterloos.
I haven't had that one. I see one in front of me. There's a strawberry Waterloo that Nick brought with him.
Yeah, this was just at work and was cold, so I took it.
For the watermelon, looked pretty good.
I don't love the, you know what? Honestly, I love the coconut one that we get. What company is that, Evan?
We got the coconut mango, the bowl and basket.
Yes, the bowl and basket coconut mango. Everybody says it tastes like soap, but it tastes like the best soap I've ever drank.
How about you, Mikey? Top two.
Orange mango, Spindrift, and we're going to go watermelon Waterloo.
Mm. Waterloo. Getting a little ABBA sample from Mikey there.
Evan, your top two.
I'm going to go in number two. This has recently been demoted to number two, the LaCroix coconut. And
it's a polarizing
number one,
flavor.
Probably the best seltzer I've ever had in my life, pineapple bubbly.
Wow.
You ever had it?
No, I don't really mess with the bubblies.
It's fucked up.
Wouldn't be that good.
It's crazy. It's the freshest pineapple taste I've ever had.
Have you tried the pineapple Spindrift?
I haven't.
I think you're gonna change your tune.
Oh well, I look forward to changing my tune because let me tell you, clearly I'm a guy who likes a pina colada, and I can make a really nice seltzer cocktail with those two together.
That's true. I never considered that. I don't really like the coconut standalone, but it would probably be good in drinks, mixed drinks.
See, here's the thing, a lot of people don't. I feel like it's a very polarizing seltzer, but I think that suntan lotion flavor is what I'm looking for.
It's on a hot day.
On a cold day, on a hot day, I don't even give a shit. It's the flavor that I'm looking for.
Wow.
You're lathering up that throat with the bubbly goodness.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about it.
You guys have a really intense podcast.
Well, anyway, we're here to talk about music.
Wild accusations around.
So, Nick, you are a drummer.
I'm retired.
Nick retired from drumming. But, Nick, you were once a drummer.
I did for several years do the drum. I played the drum on the song.
Nick played the drum on the song.
I listened to the song today. It's pretty good.
Yeah, well, we're going to all listen to it here together and then chat about it for about seven seconds before we change whatever we're talking about.
I was thinking today, Evan, in my preparations for this podcast about when we started Omar, the band, I think it was going to be our first show, was in our house. We were having practice like the day before, and you just came and sat there and watched us like in the darkness against the wall. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. You just like came and watched me and Candace practice, and then you got us onto the two-piece fest like a few days later, which was our second show, I think. Or maybe I have the dates backwards and two-piece fest was first. I can't remember. But you were
Omar
pretty
was awesome.
Instrumental in that, in those early days of us trying to figure out how to be a band or whatever.
Well,
you're
I'm
our first
to,
fan.
Glad to have helped. Oh, I get the first fan tag? This is good. I was a big Omar fan. Omar was really good. Saw you guys a lot. Candace broke some guitar strings, lent Candace my guitar. Candace bled all over my guitar.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Yeah, I don't know what was up with the string breaking. I don't know if it was a technique thing or if it was just the guitar needed to be like serviced or something.
It was pure energy, you know, in the moment, just like really tomahawking those strings.
It was like every time, though. It was a constant problem.
It probably was. The bridge probably had like, it was always the A string too.
One time we had to get one of her guitars fixed because there were burrs in the saddle.
Mm. That's what I was going to
say. That'll do it.
There were probably burrs in the saddle.
She probably had some burrs in there.
Probably had some burrs in the saddle.
It's funny that she bled all over your guitar. One of my favorite pictures of her is her, I can't remember what the house was called, but it was on like Spring Garden Street. And we started doing stuff there after we had moved out of B&D and into like moved up to Fishtown. And there's a picture of her like doing something, like sucking on something with her mouth and like holding her finger out weird. And then if you read the comments, she's like cleaning her contact lens that had fallen out onto the ground in her mouth to put it back in her eye, which I can't imagine. I mean, I don't wear contact lenses, but I can't imagine that's the proper protocol or cleaning procedures.
No, I don't think so.
But I think that's a pretty good encapsulation of how that would normally go. us trying to do band show.
Oh man, band show was fun. I also loved that Omar would often show up to Omar shows.
Mm-hmm. R.I.P.
Mm-hmm. R.I.P. Omar.
Yeah, Omar was a West Philly staple. He was, I guess, just like the neighborhood drunk that everybody knew and loved, and he would just show up and make a scene at parties. He was he Moroccan?
Yeah, Moroccan. I believe he was. Everybody either loved him or hate him. He's definitely
a polarizing figure.
Not without his faults, but he was.
Yeah, questionable.
Our relationship with him was all largely positive.
Well, do you remember what he used to call me?
No.
His nickname for me was Pants.
Pants.
Because I was getting rid of a bunch of pants. I was going to take them to the thrift store, but he was outside on our porch when I walked outside to do it. And I was like, oh, Omar, do you want some pants? We're just about the same size. And he opened it up and it was like he was opening up like a Christmas gift. And he was just like pulling them out and like judging my pants in front of me and like giving me his opinion on each one. But then, yeah, he kept a bunch of my cargo pants and he would wear those around. And so whenever I'd see him, no matter how inebriated he was, he always remembered my name. Wow. Pants.
Pants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got a lot of nicknames that year.
He also dubbed us Team 12 Wheels that one time.
Oh, the 12 Wheels gang.
Because we were all on our bikes.
Yeah, six of us showed up outside with our bikes and he was wandering around the corner and then he stood and counted our wheels one by one until they got the 12 and he said, 12! 12 Wheels gang! I think we eventually, when they redid some of the cement in front of our house, somebody's carved 12 Wheels gang.
There's something written in there. Mm-hmm. For sure.
One thing Omar did do to me that I wasn't a huge fan of is I was meeting some of our neighbors and hanging out on their porch. I don't even remember these people because I think this is my one interaction with them. Omar wandered up onto the porch and wanted to light, I think he had a blunt or something, and interrupted our conversation, wandered into the middle of it. He was pretty inebriated at this point. And he asked me for a dollar, so I gave him a dollar and he lit it on fire and then used it to light his blunt. And then while I wasn't looking at him, he stuffed the flaming dollar back into my shirt pocket.
Wow. Sheesh.
I was not excited about
that. No, that stinks.
but it's a memory that stayed with me at the very least. He's nothing but memorable.
When I lived on Buckingham, he would sleep. He would live, essentially had a trunk with all his stuff in it on our porch. He would also just let himself into the house and use our kitchen and stuff. And that was kind of cool, except he would use all our sriracha and then it would be gone. Then he would put vinegar in the sriracha bottle.
He really had like a Jack Sparrow Pirates of the Caribbean vibe.
That's true.
Yeah, I can imagine him saying, "Why is the rum gone?" For sure.
Well, just like kind of how, yeah, I don't know, how he would kind of just talk quickly sometimes.
Yeah, it was kind of depended what time of day you talk to him and get a different version. Mm-hmm. First thing in the morning was great, insightful and thoughtful and whatever, but then...
And always accusing people of entrapment as the day went on.
Mm-hmm. Blah, blah, blah.
What was his thing? Was it argument is entrapment? Was that the...
Yeah, there was a lot of...
Yeah, there's sayings,
a lot of little sayings.
Yeah, wacky one.
I just remember blah, blah, blah all the time.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. Whenever you were talking and he wanted to talk, he would just blah, blah, blah at you until you stopped.
Yeah, maybe Omar was a secret Seinfeld fan and we didn't realize. Oh, no, that's yada, yada, yada. Excuse me.
Yeah, he knew a lot about movies. He always was talking about movies that I had never heard of. But
oh, I didn't know the side of him. Yeah.
Movies and like disco music. He liked that too. He had pretty good, pretty knowledgeable, actually. Shockingly so.
Man.
Early morning. You only get that stuff 9, 10 a.m. By noon, it's all gone.
Mm.
Well, we should probably listen to the song.
Yeah, we mentioned the song minutes ago.
Nick drums.
Why?
On the song.
Can we check out Hey Karma?
Hey Karma, I've got a list of people you know. You just selected them, I got the phone, so it's meaningless to me. Not bad, another reason that you get it. You stop behind your apartment, plugged in throughout the key. Sitting on a mountain atop the world. Social web of time as feels well. But a man that knew that girl, she's a diamond, she's a pearl. So you see why I'm getting anxious. But I guess it's really rubbing up the habits. Stop doing all that bad shit. You take another chance to bear the flames of friendship's sky. You light your whole lifetime.
Tight.
Well, for some reason, I seem to think that we needed two solos in that song.
Yeah, I remember we recorded the drums like in your bedroom, Evan, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Short and sweet. All I remember is walking there with my stuff, so I must not have had very much stuff, and then recording it in your room, and it was very quick. But I remember hearing the song after the fact and was like not expecting to have all these guitar solos in it.
I mean, I haven't heard that song since 9 years since we recorded it, and I played those guitar solos, and I also was not expecting all those guitar solos in it today. So
I mean, they're cool. It just like comes kind of out of nowhere.
Wow, yeah. Chris, you're surprised there are that many guitar solos in it.
Usually we stop at one for the most part, but enough about my nonsense.
You guys do love guitar solos, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, you know, it's kind of my whole personality.
No, skateboarding's part of that.
Yeah, but what is skateboarding but the guitar solo of athleticism?
Have you been watching skateboarding in the Olympics?
Has the skate competition part of it started already?
Yeah, I was watching it yesterday.
Over. Oh, damn. How was it?
It's very funny when you're watching the Olympics and they're like, fakie blunt board slide. And just like, they just say like skate terms, but like the way Olympics are announced and you're just like, that's strange.
Wow.
That's how I felt, at least. I was like, wow. They're like, wow, what good form on that fakey blunt nose slide.
So it sounds like you watched one trick so far.
No, I watched a couple, and like one of them looked impressive and the other one didn't. And they're like, oh, he did that one fakey. And, you know, he got a high score because he did it fakey. And I was like, it didn't look as impressive as the other one. I guess I get it because it's fakie and that's when you're using your opposite foot as your lead foot, but...
Well, it's you're using the same feet, but you're riding the opposite direction, essentially.
One dude did like a 360 flip into like a crooked grind. That was sick!
Yeah, that sounds really sick.
I hope won. I was like, wow, that was cool. And I was like, it's crazy that the Olympics are judging this.
That's fair. And it sounds like you got a strong opinion about yourself, so maybe they need to reconsider their skateboarding judge in the next 4 years and we get Evan Bernard in the judge's seat.
Yeah, look, they don't call me the judge for nothing.
They may call you the judge for nothing, but before we get too far from Hey Karma, I just wanted to say it's rare that we have like a full-on, well, not rare, I should say, because Greg LeBoule, who's played on many tracks, is very much a punk guy as well. But this is like one of the most distinctly just like punk backbeat songs that we have, and it's actually like a standout, refreshing kind of vibe going on there.
I was definitely the man for the job at the time.
Let me tell you.
Yeah.
You were the man for the job. Also, I'm really glad. I feel like you, in your drumming, Nick, this song is pretty much just like, I got all of Nick's showcase beats in one song in a minute and a half. It was great.
It was definitely like the time in my life when I was the most actively playing the drums, and this was right up the alley of stylistically what a lot of stuff I was doing, and that's why I remember it being like a take or two, nothing impressive that I played or anything. It was just like, yep, you were like, yep, that's it, see ya.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's great. It's your fills are great. I got the Nick Finelli signature downbeat where you would hit the kick
snare and drum overplay.
It's great. Is that what you call the beat, the snare drum overplay?
Not back then. I didn't back then. That was just
That's how music was made.
I was just cooking.
Yeah. Yeah, I probably had a similar thought process about those fucking guitar solos.
That's just what naturally came out of us at the time.
You hear that guitar solo? It needs another guitar solo.
Chances are I recorded my rhythm guitar and Tim recorded the bass. You recorded the drums, Nick. And chances are Chris wasn't there when we tracked it. And I brought it to Chris. And Chris was like, what the fuck am I supposed to do here? And I was like, I don't know. There's a space here and a space here. And Chris was like, great. I know exactly what to do here.
So you're telling me
that's probably what happened.
Yeah.
So both spaces need guitar solos.
And chances are it was Chris starting off as a joke being like, what if I play something completely ridiculous? And I was like, why not? Have you listened to our band before? There's like some taste, but mostly not. It's mostly very untasteful. It's very funny, actually. The other day when we were working on the final mixes to the Slow Mass record, Scott, the guy who was engineering, you know, I had a bunch of mix notes and a lot of them were like, make the guitars big and dumb. And he was like, you could have just told me you wanted me to get rid of all of the tasteful mixing. That's all you needed to say. And I was like, look, I like big, dumb, ignorant, loud, dumb, ignorant things.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I have no taste. I understand. Lately, I've been playing an acrylic BC Rich Mockingbird and a bunch of RGs with Floyd Roses. Like, I got no taste.
I don't know what those are, but they sound freaky. I know BC Rich is like spiky guitars.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a spiky one for sure. And it's also translucent, so you can see everything that's happening behind it. There's no mystery with this one.
Actually, I put new pickups in it, and I set it up, and it's my favorite guitar I own by a landslide.
Wow.
It plays so well. It sounds amazing. Granted, it's about as heavy as if you put two of your SGs on you.
Well, an SG's a fairly light guitar, so that's kind of a hard metric.
Well, this one's 13 pounds.
A lot. That's a big guitar.
It's a heavy guitar.
Sheesh. And see-through?
It's see-through. It's made of plastic. It's acrylic plastic.
I encountered one of those in work once. The guy from the OCs has a clear guitar.
Yes, he does.
It was fun because they showed up really late. For this show, it was at the truck, and like after the first band had played, they showed up, and he had one guitar with him, his special custom clear guitar, and it did not work when he got there. We had a guy waiting to fix it, like on site, and they showed up between the changeover from band one to two, so we had the duration of band two to try to get this guitar operational, like sold out, show, full house, everybody, and he's just like in this tiny office, and I don't think he got it done in time. I think he had to use one of the opener's non-see-through guitars.
Pathetic.
Yeah,
I was hoping for a story of triumph. That was a twist at the end there.
I mean, he put a backs against the wall in every sense of the word. I mean, he showed up after, we're talking like 8:30.
Yeah, that's not fix-it time.
With a broken guitar. One or the other. If you get there on time, we could fix it. That's the only time I've encountered a clear guitar, and it was very annoying.
Ah, so it left a bad taste in your mouth. Mm-hmm. Well, don't worry, Evan's generally much more prepared than that. So next clear guitar you see will be for a full-fledged rock performance.
I feel like every show, like this show, my reverb pedal, like halfway through the set, was just like, you know what? I'm going to start just making a terrible sound, even when it's off. It was just like, and I was like, oh, sweet. That's cool. Why is that happening? It's not my guitar, fortunately, but usually I like tinker with my shit so often that it just like breaks all the time. I'm the
That'll
worst.
Do it.
It will do it. And it does do it.
See, that's why I retired from doing all this drumming stuff.
just going to ask you about your retirement and if you have been playing.
Not at
in
all.
The quarantine at all.
Not at all. And the thing is after thinking about that broken clear guitar and your broken reverb pedal and just like carrying all the stuff around, like, I'm glad I'm retired. You gotta worry about all this stuff all the time. Equipment and junk. You got to carry it into the car, out of the car, into the place. It's just a lot of work.
The carrying is a bad part. Yeah, that's probably the worst part for sure. Especially with all the gear that we have. It's all like the biggest, heaviest junk.
Maybe that's why I always tried to be in small bands.
And also, while you notably in the two bands that I listed didn't have a bass player in either
it's
of those
true.
Bands. It's true. The biggest, heaviest junk of all.
A weird stylistic decision.
Well, not so much in Omar when it's a two-piece, but in Scarier Area where you had... Did you have three guitar players?
It's just two.
Two
we
guitar
ended up
players.
Getting a bass player eventually.
Oh, okay.
Towards the end of that band. But yeah, for some reason, we just wanted to just have guitars.
Scarier Area really had a way with naming things.
I was thinking about the song titles you guys had are some of my favorite
that's
song titles
silly.
Of all time.
Scarier Area, I just said it once, that phrase on, you remember Ian Charlton?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
he
yes.
He lived around the corner on 44th Street. They had like a deck, and I remember we were out there once, and someone, either I said it or someone just said those two words, and I was like, yeah, that's going to be the dumbest band I ever start one day. Sure enough. I forgot that all those songs are named. They're like band names, right? Like Styx and...
It's like band names that are famously misspelled.
But spelled
correct way. Mm-hmm. So like Def Leppard was a Def Leppard.
Yeah, yeah.
Aerosmith.
Okay, yeah, that's actually a funny one.
That's a really good one. There was a third one I can't recall.
I remember one is Styx because it was Styx. Just the word Styx.
Just Styx,
so
yeah.
Good.
It was good. It was all really good.
It's fun to be stupid.
Yeah.
It's the best.
But no drumming of late. I still got the tubs. They're down in the basement. I don't think I got any cymbals anymore.
The tubs? Is that a common slang term for drums?
Sure, it's the drums themselves.
That's so good. I love that.
They're tubs. They look like tubs.
The tubs?
Yeah. You could take the lid off of them if you want. Sometimes I guess you got to change the lid.
Store some leftover spaghetti in there if yeah. you so choose.
I mean, you could put anything in it if you wanted to.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
Well, speaking of drumming and Nick doing it, Nick, I don't know if you want to go into being on a reality television show at all on this podcast, but I would like you to.
Yeah, I'll field any questions you have.
Tell the listener the story.
Well, you were on Linda Perry's reality show, right?
Yes.
Where she was making a band.
It was called Make or Break the Linda Perry Project. Please do not watch it or look it up. No, this is not a plug. This is the opposite of a plug.
It's unplugged is what you're saying?
It's unplugged.
Yes, I love acoustic shows.
I guess the funny story is how it happened, which is just a friend of a friend knew her. Our friend Heather's sister is friends with the lady Linda Perry. And I just kind of got like an unsolicited email saying, hey, do you guys want to fly to California in 2 days and be on this TV show and compete to get the major label record deal with this producer?
Because, of course, Linda Perry was the songwriter and the singer of the Four Non Blondes.
Yes. And she also wrote songs like Beautiful by Christina Aguilera. She has like a lot of high accoladed pop songs.
Oh, wow. I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's
a lot
sick.
Of Pink's material is hers. She wrote it, produced it. She's pretty famous in her realm, but we just got this email out of nowhere and it's just our little two-piece stupid punk band named after a local vagrant. And so I ignored it. Like assuming it was fake. And then they started calling me and I would just be like, what are you talking about, man? And hang up the phone. And then eventually I like looked up who she was and thought it would probably be a good idea to get Candace in front of her.
Yeah.
And she turned out to sort of be. She wins the show in the end. And
spoiler.
They did made her record and all, which was pretty cool for a while for us. We did some touring and then it all disappeared, which is
as it does
in that situation.
Especially with reality television, I feel like it's very rare that you get a Kelly Clarkson level of support.
Yeah. And with major labels too, if it's not selling out the gate, they're not going to put more money behind it, right? So that's probably like the second to last time I actively played drums was when we were playing before that happened. Because once it happened, we kind of had to scrap. Our second EP was going to come out. Stereophonodon was going to make 7 inches of it. We actually had test presses and everything, but they're like, no, you don't. No longer are you allowed to release this, you dummies. It was also called Omar Sells Out and like has a picture of our faces and a bunch of money on the cover. I think they just didn't like the implication that like...
What the fuck?
It was named and all of that was done before any of this ever
Wait,
came
is
up,
this a... Can I hear that? Is that
it's,
there?
It's out. It's on Bandcamp.
Oh, good. Thank God.
We have the original one from college and then we broke up for a while and then we made this one trying to like... start the band up again in earnest, and then we had to stop the band because she had a major label record deal.
Is there a non-compete clause that's ongoing, or could you possibly re-release it again?
They dropped her, so I'm sure we could do. I mean, I don't think there's a demand for it anymore.
I think you have a demand on this podcast for it, at the very least. I mean, we're all big Omar fans.
We'll sell 2 or 3 7-inches to you guys. They'll be $400 each.
Deal.
Wow, this sounds like a ripoff.
I mean, the plate might still exist.
All right, they're $420 each.
They actually had the test presses. Candace has one. But I remember listening to it with Russell at my house and being like, okay. But then, like, soon after everything happened, and we had to shelve it and throw it out.
Sinister.
They let us like digitally release it, which is why you can listen to it. But they said no physical, no playing shows, no nothing.
That's crazy.
What's crazy about it is like the show filmed and then it took a year for it to air. And then it took another 9 or 10 months for her record to come out. So it was almost 2 years where we virtually couldn't do anything. Not really supposed to tell anyone anything. We can't be in bands or it's all like, I guess I could have if I wanted to, but it was kind of like I was working with her management and stuff like that. But it was a full 2 years where it was just waiting for the record to come out. They recorded it almost immediately after the show filmed, I feel like. And then we just had to sit around and wait on it for 2 years.
Why did they shelve it for so long? Do you know?
The show just took a year for them to get it into the schedule on VH1. And then the record they largely like employed classic major label promotional tactics, trying to get on the radio and all sorts of stuff. So they wanted the full 9 month publicity window in front of it. But I think that it turned out being detrimental because the show just aired. Now everyone's going to just like be on the hook for 9 months. Like people don't think about stuff for that long anymore.
Everything that would have been pretty quickly. Hype.
That's why the second Omar record never came out. And that's when I pretty much retired from making drum songs, except we did go on one tour for Hemming as a band with Cayetana a few years after her record came out. It was like the last Cayetana tour, I think. So that was the last time I've touched a drum, probably 4 years ago.
Wow.
So you got exclusive drum tracks. There's only so many recordings of me playing drums in the world, and you got one right here.
Thank you for your contribution to America.
I wish it was more valuable for you.
Well, once we get that second Omar album re-release, the value is going to skyrocket.
I think so.
Then the Super Weeks will be selling out shortly after.
Yeah, maybe we could use some of Candace's channels to promote
this absolutely.
Stuff.
Yo, let me be very clear about this. The Super Weeks, we are ready to sell out at the drop of a hat. We'll sell out for anything, just about. As long as it's not morally completely reprehensible, we'll gladly advertise like whatever hat, shoe, or taco you want.
Milk tea.
Sign us up for milk tea. We'll be on the faces on the can.
All right, Nick, you're in charge of our management now. Actually, I guess Eric's in charge of our management, so I guess we can't.
He's a better fit.
Maybe you could, I don't know, what fights, like maybe like Tums or something?
What?
Does hot sauce give you something that Tums fights?
What?
Oh, you're saying like acid reflux?
Yeah, does hot sauce give you acid reflux?
So you want to have a partnership where we create our own demand for Tums and then, you know, vice versa, where now you can tolerate hot sauce with Tums.
You can hurt your fans and you can heal them.
That's smart.
All the same show.
Building our own kind of cottage industry wherever we go. With tummy troubles.
And you should also sell bland food so they have incentive to buy the hot sauce in the first place.
Wow. See, this is why we employed you.
Boiled chicken. You can just sell it at the merch table. Pretty cheap.
Oh, my great aunt still makes and eats boiled chicken. It's disturbing.
I don't know if I've ever I see jokes about it, but do people actually do that?
Yes.
Just after the Second World War, it was a common cheap eat, and she just has a taste for it, and she doesn't like spices. She doesn't even really like salt. Anything that has flavor falls into the category of just being too spicy, whether it is spice-related or not, and she likes that wet, weird stuff. That's what she goes for.
Just wet meat. Sloppy wet. Steak.
She likes the that sloppy wet, steaks.
Wet.
Wet, good.
Why are you going to boil anything? You could cook it so many other ways.
They didn't know that back then. They hadn't invented oil yet. Oil was just for bathing in ancient Greece. There were no air fryers. George Foreman may not have even been born at that point, so his grill wasn't on the table.
It's true.
Wow, this timeline is pretty incredible.
It's a little messy. My timeline's a little bit of a spaghetti mess in my brain, but yeah, I think that all adds
up. You
are
Italian.
I definitely George Foreman grill all my chicken. It's the only way to do it.
Yeah, well, you got to get those lean meats so you can get yourself in fighting shape.
It's interesting. That industry doesn't really exist anymore. Celebrity branded junk you buy off the TV.
That's not true. That must exist still.
Well, it's more native advertising.
And there's definitely still like Bible commercials that you can order a Bible from and somebody famous will be there. But nobody's selling like their own.
Oh, yeah, like the Vin Diesel Bible.
Yeah. Or like I saw one that was about Fieldy from Korn once.
Oh, well, he's a devout Christian now.
Yeah, he's born again. But it seemed like it was
Fieldy too?
I think it was Fieldy. It was somebody from Korn. It seemed like it was like a
monkey.
It was like a biography thing, and then it turned out to be a Bible commercial.
A Bibleography.
But I feel like nobody's selling celebrity-branded junk on TV much anymore.
We could start. Do you know any celebrities?
You could use your band's stature as the Super Weeks.
Believe me, we're trying.
Sell some junk.
I think we have maybe like 30 monthly listeners on Spotify.
That's a little higher than that. It's a little higher than that.
All right, let's play the guessing game. Who knows? Who can guess how many monthly? Let's all take bets. Nick, you're first.
Monthly listeners to the podcast or the band?
The band.
Oh, monthly listeners on Spotify. We're in the thousands. I don't remember specifically.
All right, well, give me your best guess.
I think it's like 2.5.
1.6.
All right, Mikey?
1.7.
Wow. Fuck.
I'm going with 900.
Price is Right rules over here. Bullshit.
Wow. 3,659.
Okay, I was closest then. I win.
Wow. Chris, you know what you win as an award? A Flubber poster.
Oh, hell yes.
That's an honor.
That's a dream come true. Yeah, the greatest honor that you could have bestowed upon me from my B&D heritage.
You should be directly marketing some Super Weeks branded junk to those 3,000 people.
Look, we have lots of Super Weeks branded junk.
Yeah, that's fair. We nobody's
not just
buying
shirts
it.
And stuff, though. I mean, like
we have the hot sauce,
kitchen gadgets, and
we have weed pipes.
Super Weeks. Yeah, we have weed pipes. We have.
Why don't we have hacky sacks?
That is a good point, Mikey. You bring up a very good point.
Yeah, we have the weed paraphernalia.
Yeah, it goes hand in hand.
Look. Let's just make our own strain of weed.
Oh, yeah. And we have the branded grinders that people could just pop some nuts right into.
We don't have a good name for that strain of weed, though.
Why?
Because no one's going to want to smoke it. It's not going to get them high.
Oh, I get it, because it's called Super Weak. What if we call it Super Strong?
Okay, I'm on board.
Okay.
Or what if we can call it Better Heavens?
That's a good one.
We can call it Dab Year?
Yeah, maybe not a strain of weed as much as your own, like, yeah, tinctures or dab setup, dab goo. What do you call it? The stuff that goes in the dab.
Your own paraphernalia.
Well, a tincture, that makes me feel like it's a more classic sort of like snake oil scenario. Yeah. Where you have a branded
drops, bottle. Drip drops.
Dr. Super Weeks is drip drops. It's pure opium.
Well, you could tie this in with the hot sauce into a whole, you get them high, they get hungry, then their stomach hurts. You're starting to build out like a whole night here where you could be charging people every step of the way.
Holy shit, you should be our manager.
Signing them up for AAA and stuff at the fucking merch table.
Yeah, selling magazine subscriptions.
Some good life decisions.
I'll leave it all to you. I'll be busy eating boiled chicken in the back with hot sauce.
All the leftovers.
No, actually what we used to do is we would get like tortilla round chips, you know, and put them out, and I would just like sit there eating our hot sauce on the tortilla rounds that were
like
supposed to be for people to try, but I would just eat them all.
Oh yeah, I love snacking on those behind the merch table.
See, personally, as a venue operator, I would not let you bring your hot sauce into my venue.
And oh,
see,
we've faced that problem before.
Because it's glass, first of
all. I would do it.
Second
of all.
And then
I'd flip you off.
It could easily make a big mess if you break a bunch of it.
We've never, at least to my knowledge, I don't think we've ever broken a bottle in a venue, unless, do you remember otherwise, Nard?
I have absolutely broken a bottle in a venue.
Oh, you have, but I mean, like, we cleaned that up.
Absolutely been like,
no
oh,
one
hey, what's up?
It
just, like, knocked it off the table and it went flying and shattered.
That's
yeah,
why
I've done
I wouldn't,
that.
Wouldn't
there have been
this.
Venues that have been like, we're worried they're going to throw this bottle of hot sauce at the performer, and I'm like, who the fuck is going to do that?
Somebody.
Well, guess what? It's never happened, and I've never not sold the hot sauce at a show. I've brought it in every single time.
All right. Well, let's hope our paths don't cross professionally then, Aaron.
All right. Well, guess what? If they do, I'm telling you right now, I'm going to break the rules. Try and stop me, police.
I will stop you.
You will not.
That's my whole purpose.
What are you, the police?
I'm the venue police, effectively.
So you're telling me you're a cop.
Not so much a cop, but I do have to enforce rules.
Look,
it's for the safety of everyone else.
What are you, the
you're not
rules
thinking
police?
About other people's safety. You're thinking about your pockets with your hot sauce sales.
Yeah, you're describing Evan pretty well.
Not considering the ill effects it could have.
What are you talking about? I'm not thinking about my pockets, but I'm certainly not thinking about other people.
That's what I'm saying.
Someone could get really injured on your hot sauce bottles.
Look, if somebody's dumb enough to get injured on a hot sauce bottle, they deserve it.
You're the man who's constantly smashing them at the merch table.
Look, I stand by my story. I'm sorry to anyone I may have injured with a hot sauce bottle. I've never done that before, though. Let's stop talking about this.
I'm going to cut that part out for liability reasons.
Yeah, just in case someone listens to this in advance.
Glass and all the hot sauce.
Oh, boy. Sales are plummeting now. We got a big graph, and it's just going down.
But you're talking about being in operations at a venue, and you're working at the TLA now. You've worked at a bunch of places. We actually worked together, I think, briefly at Kung Fu Necktie, right? Or we weren't there at the same time.
I haven't been there for a year or two now, but I was there pretty regularly. I was more of an office figure there. Mm-hmm. I wasn't operating on site. I mean, sometimes I would work the door or bartend or whatever, but I was more so doing computery work.
Upstairs. What do you do now at the TLA?
I'm the operations manager, which basically just means like run the venue, you know? So previously for years I worked as a production manager, which is artist facing, and you deal with the band and the tour manager and all that. And now I'm the operations manager, which is more customer facing, and it's more general building management and data, you know, show to show, like crowd management in terms of security guards and all other people that are employed that don't do sound or lights at the venue, you know, the bar, the tickets, safety.
He actually offered Jared a job downstairs doing security again. So he's got that kind of power.
It's true. Jared used to do some security at the truck. He would like sit in the chair and tell you to be careful because the step was big. We actually put him at the back door a bunch of times, which is kind of a dangerous one, but he was doing that.
Just to intimidate people from coming in or out? Or
just so people don't sneak in to the backstage, you know, like the exit, the artist entrance. He would work that sometimes. So maybe he'll come back.
Do people try doing that?
Oh, yeah. People will try anything you can think of.
Oh, yeah? Like what?
To access the artist, of course. Either they love him or want to kill him or anywhere in between, they're going to try doors and
maybe they're sneaking in there with a rogue hot sauce bottle in hand going after the artist.
Let's not go there.
You got to be really mindful in my line of work about keeping the artist secure and safe from everybody. You'd be amazed.
What have you, are there any, you know, strange things you've ever faced?
Nothing particular that I would be willing to speak on.
I want to hear the stuff you're not willing to speak on.
I mean, in terms of like artist fan interaction, thankfully, no, I haven't really had any bad situations with that before. I guess a pretty funny one is the movie's called The Big Sick. You guys know this movie.
Oh, Camille Nanjiani.
Yeah, I saw that.
And Ray Romano. They did a press tour for it, and it was, you know, they're all like stand-up comedians, I guess, all the actors in the movie, because it was Camille and Ray Romano and a couple other people, and they just did a few shows, and we did one at the Troc. And Ray Romano's like pretty famous. You got to be pretty serious about even getting him in and out of the car. If people know he's around, they might try to meet him. And everything went great. We got them in the car. They were pulling away, and then they pulled up, and there were some fans standing there, and he actually decided to get out of the car to talk to them. And everyone was like befuddled, like, what is this guy doing? We've all been taking this so seriously so he doesn't have to interact with people because he's like extremely famous and recognizable. And they drove away and the tour manager was like, oh yeah, he does that sometimes because he like doesn't get to talk to people a lot.
Oh my God.
Because he's just like a famous actor that is at home with his family all the time. So he doesn't like get, I mean, being an actor, I guess, if, other than when you're out in public, you don't get like that face-to-face adoration that like bands or comedians do, you know? It's kind of like all online or whatever. So he just wanted to talk to some folks against everybody else's wishes that was involved in what was going on. But I kind of couldn't believe it because they were taking it pretty seriously. And then he just like jumped out of the car and started shaking people's hands.
Man,
like, why?
He's desperate for it.
Why, Ray? Why?
I had a very opposite, one of my few celebrity experiences. I was in California and Jerry Springer hurriedly rushed past us because he didn't want to talk to anybody. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I've seen that plenty of times. The best. If any of you out there are trying to go to a concert and meet the artist after the show, don't just have someone stationed at the back door because y'all look like fools big time when the artist just leaves calmly through the front door because nobody's around because everybody's waiting at the back door. It's a simple switcheroo.
What are you doing, Nick? You're giving up
giving
all
the secrets.
You're giving up the secrets. Now everyone's going
to
know.
So if you're going to a Super Week show and you want to really meet Doc and you're having trouble finding him in the club and you really want to deliver a message to him and they're being pretty serious about his security, don't wait in the big cluster of people out back. Wait out front because they might sneak him through. through the front.
Or better yet,
I'll be at the merch table.
Yeah.
Because we can't afford to hire anybody, so you know where to find me.
Just send us a DM on Twitter and he'll go find you. It's happened before. He's gone to Hawaii and met a fan.
Oh, no, that was a weird happenstance thing where I don't know if our one Hawaiian super fan, Reef Weaver, is listening, but
give it up for Reef.
Yeah, give it up for my boy Reef. I was on vacation in Hawaii a few years ago, and I just was tweeting from our account that I was enjoying the sand and the surf and whatnot, and I got a direct message from a guy named Reef Weaver, and he was like, hey, I'm a fan of the Super Weeks, and I live in Hawaii. I kind of know where you are right now. Do you want to meet up? And I was like, yeah, sure. I was like, I didn't think we had any fans, especially not in Hawaii, so this is very exciting. And he came to the beach where I was, and he got me and my girlfriend at the time a bottle of pineapple wine, which is very kind of him. And then he was like, hey, do you want to go to the top of the mountain? I'll drive you up there, and you can like look at the whole beach. It's like the middle of the night. Look at the whole island. You can see the stars and everything. So I was like, yeah, sure, because I had drank this entire bottle of pineapple wine, and so I was, you know, very suggestible. And I got in the back of his car, and we were halfway up the mountain. We've been driving for like half an hour or something. I was like, I don't know this guy. He got me very drunk.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trapped in the back
He's
of his car.
He's driving me to the top of a mountain.
Yeah, and I was like, I may have made a very bad decision. And then we got to the top of the mountain, and it was a beautiful sight, and I was very grateful. And Reef, you're not a creep. You're not a creep, Weaver. You're just that classic Reef Weaver. Also, he's one of the best names I've ever heard.
Weaver.
I sang that exact song to him when he revealed his name.
That is a risky decision.
Yeah, but it paid off. It was a good time. Thank you, Reef. But yeah, obviously, I'm very accessible. I am no Ray Romano. I guess in a way, I'm just as desperate for human connection as Ray Romano, but without any of the celebrities. So get ready for me to shake your hand, strangers.
Maybe one day.
Nick, have you ever had somebody come up to you and be like, wow, I can't believe I saw you on a reality show?
Yes, that would happen for a few months after when it was airing. It would happen just in public at Wawa or whatever. And then it happened at work a few times, where I would just be like working a show at the Troc that was largely populated by children. And then like a mom would see me and be like, oh my God, it's you. And like,
oh yeah, the moms love reality.
It was terrifying. The first time me and Candace went on tour after it aired was pretty much like right after the show aired. So there was a lot of buzz around her because she had won it or whatever. And that was actually one of my functions day in, day out, was when we would get to the venue, as I would walk around a bunch once the doors would open so people would see me and we could kind of suss out how many, what we would call stranger dangers, we had that were obsessively trying to meet her. So they would see me and be like, oh, that's the other guy from the show. And I could kind of like feel them out a little bit to make sure they weren't like totally crazy weirdos.
Did you meet a lot of crazy weirdos?
We definitely did. It had a unique fan base for sure. It's a really weird feeling. It's not like being in a band that has fans feels pretty normal and natural, and like people are around, you're making music, people are hearing it. It's nothing weird, but this is like a whole different thing where it's like you're on TV and people like you for a totally different reason. And it comes with a lot of pressure when you interact with them. They just kind of like want the world out of you because they can't believe like this, they have this opportunity to speak to you. It's pretty overwhelming, honestly. I didn't love it, but it was fun being the first line of defense and sussing them out. That was kind of an interesting thing every day, because they would come, it would usually be like the first person in line, you know, come screaming in right to the merch table, and then it's me and they're like, oh my God. But then depending on how excitable they were, we could keep her at a safe distance or however we wanted to handle
it. Was Candace never really out?
I mean, she didn't need to be. And we were playing clubs. It was all sold out shows. It was just like, I was selling the merch for everybody, so I was there anyway. She was probably just like eating snacks in the back, you know?
At some point, did she hop out of your tour Escalade and just start shaking hands with fans much in the Ray Romano style?
No, she would. We were pretty good about like right after you play and then right after the headliner plays, like, just go to the merch table for a little bit and stand there and get it over with, and we'll have already kind of figured out what you got to deal with today. Or
were you on the tour with Chris Cornell?
No, she did that one herself. I was originally going to go, but he had his own production crew and merch seller, and they were going to do everything for her. So I would have pretty much just been going to get the check, you know. So she decided she would do it herself and learn a little bit about the business, you know.
Did she drive?
No, she was on the bus. They had buses.
With Chris?
He had his own bus. I think he mostly flew places, but she was on, it was just like two sound people and a lighting person and a merch seller and her on a bus. So her and a bunch of bus. Yep. Her and a bunch of middle-aged roadies. It's got to be a weird mix,
yeah,
for sure.
Creep factor is probably high.
I mean, she loved those guys. I think that it was just kind of like, she's like this young, just won a reality TV show lady, like going out in the world, and they're just like professional roadies for Chris Cornell. It's an interesting little mixture of people, I think.
But that's the thing, is like, Candace is a rocker at heart.
For sure.
So I feel like maybe going into it, all the roadies and everything were like, oh, this is going to be weird. And then they meet Candace and they're like, oh, you are just fucking down. Oh, yeah. Hang.
Or just that she's good. I think that's what won them over at first, was just like, oh, she's actually good. A lot of that touring was kind of put in place by personal connections of the producer, Linda. So I think that people probably weren't necessarily, your expectations got to be kind of weird at that point when it's like, oh, Chris is letting his friend open the whole tour at the last minute. Like, got to be looking at that and be like, this is probably not going to be great. But
yeah,
I think that after the first couple nights, they're like, oh, she's good. We'll help her and make it easy for her and be nice to her.
Well, how can you get Linda Perry to do our record?
I don't know.
I'm sure Linda Perry would not want anything to do with our records. So,
what are you talking about? She rocks.
Yeah, she wears cool hats with goggles on them. Maybe not so much anymore, but
I don't know. I think she's still got the hats, probably. Okay. We haven't been in touch with her for some time.
Yeah, that's fair.
I could try to text her and be like, listen, I know these guys.
Linda,
you're gonna love it.
I'm on a podcast right now with a bunch of idiots. They seem to think you should produce their record.
Couple of guitar solos per song would be ideal.
I've peeled it back. We even have songs without guitar solos now. So we've exercised our own level of taste at this point.
Have you thought about going fully the other way and doing mostly just solos?
I think one song on the new record that basically a solo the whole
that
time.
That is true, actually. You're right. I take it back.
Yeah.
I did listen to, in preparation for the podcast, I listened to The Skateboards' Fixed Gear Dad. That's kind of just like guitar solos, right?
Yeah, yes. That's, we've talked about this, The Skateboards, a few times on the podcast, and that was a B&D hoopty super group of sorts. It was mostly, well, we called it like party prog. So it wasn't like quite complicated enough to be actual progressive rock, but it was, we did bring the party at the very least.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah, a lot of arpeggiated synthesizers. Nonstop guitar soloing. Yeah, you're right. That's
at least that song. I mean, I only listened to that one today.
Well,
but
to be fair, there's two synth solos in that song too, so the guitar does step back for a little
and
bit.
And comes right in with a guitar solo, I feel like.
It's the big chord hits and then a guitar solo.
More of like a melodic lead, I guess. But
yeah, it's melodious and chill.
Just fires right in until it gets to the vibey AC/DC part.
Oh, what are you calling the AC/DC part? Not even now.
The hook, when the hook comes in.
Oh, like you can't. Did it? Oh, okay. Yeah, that's fair. I could see the comparison. We do a four vocal layer, three part harmony during that section, though, which is a little less AC/DC and a little bit more Yes, I suppose, in a way. But
some perfect meeting of the two worlds.
That was the goal, to bring the party of AC/DC and the over-the-top stupidity of the band Yes.
You've done it. You've accomplished great things.
Yeah, and it's all been downhill since then.
Yeah, the Super Weeks are kind of the alter ego of...
Pick up the mic, Evan.
What, I can't just rest the mic on my arm?
Evan was laying in bed, as he always does whenever he's recording remotely from Chicago, and he's gotten to the point now where he laid the microphone on the bed next to him, and he was talking at it from a distance.
Aren't you guys like professional recording engineers?
Yeah, at times. Evan's also a professional lounger, so.
I am fucking chilling right now.
Loaded with milk tea.
Loaded. But let me say, the Super Weeks are kind of the Skateboards' alter ego. You know, the Skateboards are the instrumental version of the Super Weeks, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much the same shit. Chris and I are just going to write dumb songs. One of them's going to have vocals over it, and the other one's going to have more guitar solos.
Yeah, that is how you can tell them apart.
That said, we should definitely put the Skateboards online for everyone to listen to at this point, because we may have peaked at that point.
It is on Bandcamp. I think for Johnny's sake, we can't release it under the Super Weeks banner on Spotify, but I'll talk to him.
Link in description.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I always link everything in the descriptions. It's available.
It is a little difficult to find.
No, it's not. The skateboards.bandcamp.com.
Well, if I knew that, but if you're just trying to search for
just Google the Skateboards.
Yeah, it's a highly un-Googleable name. There is the Skateboard magazine that probably comes up first.
The Skateboards Band, Philadelphia. I just Google, I'm doing the things I like. I'm riding a fixed gear bike.
Take you right to our lyrics page.
It took me a minute. That's all I'm saying.
Nick, did you listen to Ultimate Surfing Dad?
I only listened to Fixed Gear Dad.
You
I didn't
have
enough
time. On your way home tonight, pop on Ultimate Surfing Dad, because I don't know if you remember our Wipeout-esque drum solo section ends with an explosion.
It ends in an explosion in the final hit.
No, I do remember when they were making a Yoshi Story record at Hoopty Hoop. That they had Pato walk around with a backpack on one time and do like a field recording kind of thing. I can't remember what the goal of it was, but he had like microphones in a backpack and they were playing in different rooms of the house and he just had to like walk around and I don't know.
I did not remember this.
I think it, like, if you listened back, it probably fits interestingly into the mix of the song. Like, you probably do feel some sort of like sonic pull in different directions. But at the time, I remember thinking, this is crazy. We're really doing crazy stuff over here.
I just like the image of our friend Pato being like an audio turtle as he's like wandering around the house.
It was like a backpack with microphones on it or something.
We gotta get
check
Pato
out a Yoshi story if you want to find something that's hard to find on Google.
Did they release any of that music?
Yeah, that record is somewhere and it's excellent. It's really good.
I'm going to go with it's on a yoshistory.bandcamp.com.
I'm worried about putting too much information about Google out there, because the highly litigious Nintendo will definitely go after them if they catch wind of it.
I think we'll leave that up to the listener to figure out how to find it, because I don't think a Yoshi story is spelled correctly. Oh, yeah, it is on Bandcamp. You're right. But story is spelled wrong with an I instead of a Y. It's pretty good. If you never listened to it, I recommend it.
I can't find it.
Change the Y in story to an I.
I did. I guess I spelled everything else wrong.
I'll send it along.
Yeah, I'll link it in the description as well.
Link in descript. What else? Anybody else that we should bring up from that era? Defunct bands that no one's ever heard of?
Well, Nick, didn't you play drums in Kyle's
band? Oh, yeah. Me
Kyle's
and Kyle
band?
Had that band, Easy Corner.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course, Easy Corner. Did you also play on Kyle's senior project too? That was just me. Kyle Graham, who we've mentioned a few times, is also a resident of B&D, and actually he was he named the series of houses B&D 1 and B&D 2.
It was named after his proclivities for breakfast and dessert food at the same time.
That's also Mikey's favorite,
like eating an omelet and then eating a cookie.
Mikey has a mouthful of cereal, I believe, right now, having his own breakfast for dessert. Fittingly.
Sorry.
You're fine.
Don't apologize for that.
What about Airports, right?
That was a band.
Evan's band back then. Yeah, we've talked about Airports a few times. We had Peter Martin on as a previous guest who was also a member of that band.
Trying to think what else.
Did you play in any bands where Kyle was playing saxophone?
He would play occasionally in Easy Corner, bust the sax out.
Oh, I love that stuff.
Mm-hmm. I think he actually sold the sax. I think we're done with the sax.
Oh, wow. No. That's a tragedy.
You guys didn't hit him up to use his talents enough. So we got rid of
that
thing.
That's fair. This is on us. You're right.
There was another Kyle whom Press. We did allow, you know, who we do often have record saxophone.
That makes sense.
That's his whole business.
He does a lot more of it.
Yeah. One band I think about, the name, or I should say the number, pops into my head all the time. Your brother's band, 918.
I was in that band, too.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I was going to bring that up in the beginning of this, and I was like, wait, I thought Nick was in 918.
Still a band.
Are they?
They're still a band?
How many records deep are they at this point?
I don't know. They have a new name, something about the Boardwalk, because, you know, it's all that Bouncing Souls, Gaslight Anthem stuff.
Punk.
New Jersey. Yeah, I don't think we need to get too deep into 918.
Okay, that's fair.
I don't think the recordings that I'm on are even available anymore. I think they wiped it. There's been a lot of different members in that band over the years.
That's fair.
Especially, I don't know who's in it the last 10 or
if it's
15 or whatever.
Mutated enough times now that you don't even know the name of your brother's band. I think that's
well,
a
he's
sign.
Not in it either. Him and me left at the same time.
Oh, shit. Okay, then who gives a shit? Never mind.
Yeah. I have I don't know.
No free promo for those strangers.
Yeah, we'll probably just clip this whole thing. Unless there's some real Nick Finelli historians out there that had questions about what happened there.
Let's switch gears again real quick. Speaking of all these great B&D 2 era memories, there was one major memory that sticks out for me whenever I look back on it, and it was this pretty wild party that I feel like is one of the few kind of archetypical college parties that we've had in our experience, where we teamed up with Hoopty to have a two-house party because we had a shared backyard.
Legendary.
For sure.
And Nick, I think you named this party. It was a pretty notable and a name of its time. Two houses, one cup?
Sure, sure. Yeah.
Classic party.
Man, if people forget about two girls, one cup.
Nobody forgets about that.
I think that's an indelible mark you carry
maybe,
with you.
Maybe just the younger generation isn't familiar.
I think we've spared them.
I wonder if it's still available.
And Chris is going to link you in the bio.
Link in description.
I'm not going to do that for the very reason I'm about to say. Our generation's job is to stop the cycle of trauma that has peaked with the boomer generation and just like leave a better world, much at our own expense in some ways, for the coming generations. And don't twist my words there, Evan. And a part of that is not showing them Two Girls, One Cup or anything related to that.
I was going to say that, you know, I would consider it less trauma and maybe more sexual exploration. It is NSFW, but, you know, maybe you could find out a little bit about yourself.
Yikes.
All right. Well, that's an endorsement from only one of us.
And a link in the description.
Yes,
but anyway,
the party was two houses, one cup. And I remember only a few things about it. I remember it was the two houses and we got like an insane like four or five kegs, really over expecting. That's a lot to go through.
That's
even
an incredible
even for a
amount.
Massive college party. And I remember walking around with a bike helmet with a cup taped to it. And that's how people knew where to get the cup from because I was wearing my helmet. And that's, you know, like you'd pay me and I'd give you the cup for all the kegs. And after the fact, there was probably like a whole keg and a half left that was unused. And I remember that was the week that Netflix streaming came out for the first time. And me and Pato just didn't go to school that week at college. And we just worked on the kegs and watched all of everything on Netflix for like a whole week.
Yeah, and one of those things was The Legend of Zelda cartoon. That was the first time I had ever seen that. That
Excuse
was one of the launch.
Excuse me, princess.
Yeah, exactly. And the day after that party, my dad came down to pick me up to like go on some father-son outing.
Sorry
but
about
he, that. No, it was, this is 100% his vibe because the first thing he did, he was like, oh, you guys had a party last night. And he walked through the kitchen. He's like, oh, there's two kegs left. Is there anything in this? And I was like, I don't know. He tapped the keg midday and had some beer. And then we went on our father-son jaunt.
That's way better.
I feel like I was actually there because I remember your father going through B&D with you and then having a beer.
He was in his element. He was back where he needed to be. But the party itself, one of the major things that stands out to me is, for one, we had so many people packed into our house and we had somebody DJing. And I think we were playing like Queen's Greatest Hits for a while. And that was kind of bringing the party to this like fever pitch.
Yes. And then...
And people were climbing all over everything. And
they knocked the kitchen table to bits and a couple people had to go to the hospital.
Yes. So I was going to...
Wow, really?
Yeah, detail some of this.
Yeah, probably like 15 people were on top of a big, heavy kitchen table.
It was probably, I'm going to say, six people on top of the table. But they were making enough downward force to account for 15 people being on it. And this was a fairly sturdy table, if memory serves. It was heavy. It was definitely
very heavy.
I remember at least Max, I don't remember Max's last name. I don't know if he wants to be full named on the podcast anyway, but
that's fair.
He was in the center with sunglasses on in the middle of the night. And he was one of the ones where they got up there during the Queen songs and somebody switched over to My Name is Jonas, which is like, especially for our group of friends and our generation, like the ultimate kind of hype up song. And so people were stomping along in time with the song.
Oh, sure.
And the six folks who were on the table did the same, and I think it was the second drop of the song. They coincidentally all leapt up at the same time and stomped on the table. And I remember like seeing everyone from the kitchen staring into our dining room, and then all of a sudden they were all gone. And I think it was Max, I'm pretty sure, reached his hand up. We had a chandelier in the middle of the room to try and stop himself from falling. Good. And he ripped the chandelier out of the ceiling.
Good thinking.
So it was dangling from a single wire. And this was funny enough, and it seemed like people were okay, but our friend Jordan was standing over at the edge of the table, and she got her foot crushed by the table.
Yeah, she had to go to the hospital.
Yes, and Pato, the hero of the evening, picked her up, scooped her up in his arms, and he carried her out to my car. Or I guess it was, no, I didn't have a car at the time. It was her car. And I drove her, I was like, do you want to go to the hospital? And she was like, no, just take me home, I'll be fine. And I drove her home to where she lives with Mary Ellen Little Guy and a number of other people live there.
Yeah, Spring Garden or something.
Yeah, and later that night, they were like, her foot's too swollen, and they took her to the hospital instead.
So
the weight of six men and a very heavy table was enough to warrant a hospital visit for sure.
It's too many kegs.
Too many kegs, for sure. Too many house.
Too many houses.
Only one cup.
That was a good name for a party.
It's a very good
name. That was a legendary party.
That name's up there with my other favorite Brian Glassett suggested name, Loons and Goons, where his plan was to get a bunch of large birds to account for the loons, and the goons are, of course, his friends, his goons, his goon squad.
We could still pull that off.
What a goof.
You guys want to have a bird party?
I think we're even better equipped now having adult money in hand, so.
That's true. That's what's so confounding about all the kegs is we must have lost tons of money on that. What a bad business decision.
Hey, it was for the sake of the party. Our business is partying and business is good.
Yeah, think about it this way, Nick. You spent the next week drinking that beer and watching TV. Not
that sounds
getting
like a sound
college, not
worth,
getting your college education.
Worth hundreds of dollars. Well, I'm spending money twice because I'm paying for college anyway.
Yeah, but you had a good fucking time, am I right?
I don't know.
You can't put a price on memories like that.
I think we watched a lot of Friday Night Lights, which is still a good show. So.
Never seen it.
Clear eyes, full kegs,
yeah,
two houses.
That's true.
Can't lose.
Full cups.
Clear eyes, full cups. That's definitely legendary party lore.
I think we're reaching a good point at which to kind of start to wrap things up.
You can listen to Omar if you want. Omar.bandcamp.com.
It's great.
Scarierarea.bandcamp.com.
Also great.
Listen to what I did 15 years ago.
I mean, that's what this podcast is.
That's true.
And shit we did 15 years ago.
In reality, that is what we're doing here. Hey, Karma's pretty good. Check it out. A song a day or something. A song a week.
A song a day. We're never going to do that one.
Yeah, it's a tall order.
I mean, no, nope, do it next year.
You should try to do that. They don't have to be good.
They don't have to be long.
Couple minutes.
All right, next year, 365 songs.
I'll come out of
retirement.
We're
going to write and record them every single day.
I'll play one 90-second song to help you.
Oh, no. They're all going to be 24 hours long.
This is an impossible release schedule, Evan. Unless there's a lot of dead air in these songs.
It's going to need a team.
Yeah, it's going to be just silence. It's going to be a live stream of me putting a rock on a keyboard and letting that keyboard go for a year.
Now, see?
You think it'll eventually die?
It's a lot of hypotheticals being thrown out here, Evan.
Seems like something you could easily figure out if you just get a keyboard and a rock and a camera.
All right. Well, you heard it here first. That's going to be the next Super Weeks performance art piece.
You're going to release hundreds of rolls of blank tape, call it your record.
But it's actually going to be scotch tape.
I wonder if you could upload like virtually silence to Spotify. Like, is there a minimum amount of sound that has to be on the file for them to...
There's got to be.
Because otherwise you could just put up a bunch of silence and then just play it in the, you know, on your computer and your phone all day and make a little bit of money for doing literally nothing.
Well, and not disturb anyone.
Yeah. Tell your friends, just put this on in the background all day. You barely will hear anything.
You probably need like a white noise or something. You know what I mean?
Or a metronome.
Oh my God. That would fucking be insane.
I think just a light air conditioner sound or just a fan.
Well, I guess the Super Week's next project is going to be Found Sound Ambient Noise, the album.
24-hour long tracks.
We're going to release one new song every day next year. First track's going to be Air Conditioner. Second track is going to be Toaster. Third track is Bathtub.
Just running all day?
Just running.
It's a pretty good idea.
No, it's going to be like, you know, there'll be like minute-long sounds, and we'll release one every week, and we'll do a podcast episode with those things.
Toothbrushing. Toothbrushing. Toothbrush could be the bridge.
This is dental humor you're doing, like a bridge, like for your teeth. And okay,
yep,
yes,
he's
yes,
shaking
yes.
his head. Smart.
Smoke weed.
So that's Mikey's plugs. Smoke weed.
Well, Nick, thank you for joining us on this episode of the Super Week, Super Weekly Ambient Noise Cast.
Thanks for having me.
I guess, you know, following you will be an interview with a toaster.
That makes sense. That's the logical next step. Everybody check out Hey Karma. Does the song gets released with this?
Yes, it gets released. It's in the episode. Yeah, yeah. And released. Yeah, it gets on Spotify and what have you.
Yeah, but some of the songs I've, you know, haven't put up yet because I didn't like the final mixes of them. So I haven't put them on Spotify yet. But this one, if I played my cards right, will come out when this episode airs.
Sick.
Check it out. Check out the song. The drums frickin' rule.
They do. Where can people find you on the web if they you want them to?
They can't. Good luck. I'm Bronco Obama if you want to find me.
Such a good name.
You got to go in hiding after all the time in the limelight, you know. My experience my brief experience as a public figure drove me into the darkness, so you cannot find me online. So
some people, you know, they burrow deep into the backseat of the Escalade, and some people pop out and they want to shake hands, and we're all one or the other.
Listen to the Super Weeks. That's my plug.
Okay.
Wow, these plugs are cool.
The music, too, not just the podcast. Go listen to the records.
I can't imagine there's a single person who only listens to this podcast and not the band, but...
Probably at least one.
Yeah, actually, you know what? I'm wrong. I think people would probably rather listen to our podcast than our band, but...
Listen to A Yoshi Story and The Skateboards, Easy Corner. That's probably not even... I don't even know if that's even on Bandcamp.
But definitely listen to Omar and Scarier Area. Just at least check out those song titles.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good visual gag.
You've been listening to the Super Week, Super Weekly, Supercast.
Thank you, Nikki.
Thanks
for having me. Love to pod.
Love to pod.